someone else has done. Having said that, let me introduce our first speaker, Peter Darling. Peter is going to briefly run us through the concept of the NGN to get us started. Peter is incredibly well qualified for doing that. His full CV has been made available to you, but over recent years he has led the work by our equivalent of the TCF, ACIF, in its NGN deliberations. He has been a member of the Asia-Pacific NGN study group for the ITU, and has also worked with a major consulting firm in Australia, Access Economics, in preparing a policy paper for NGN consideration by the Australian government. Unfortunately, that paper has not been released by our government at this time. Without further ado, please welcome Peter Darling to the stage.
I have the challenge of working out the technology for the first time. We're talking about the hype and the reality of NGN, what it is and what it isn't. And to a large extent, they're questions that will be looked at in some detail over the next 2 days. Aha. So it doesn't quite work. So, no, backwards. Yes, I'm trying that one.
Down one.
Ha ha, it works. This slide, which you probably can't see from the back and on the internet, looks at the telco network generations. And the concept of NGN is very much a telephone company concept in terms of the standards that are being developed. And I'll go through these in more detail later on. The ITU, International Telecommunications Union, has developed a definition which is quoted in the Commerce Commission paper. It talks about NGN as being packet-based, using multiple broadband-enabled transport technologies, so it's not just one technology. It's service-related functions. It supports generalised mobility. It's fixed and mobile. And most particularly, it enables unfettered access. Now, this question of unfettered access, I think you'll look and see coming up through this whole question. To a large extent, NGNs are actually now generation networks. We've already heard how Telecom is launching these. In Australia, Telstra and many others are launching those. The NGN standards are now being developed, almost too late, by ETSI, in the European Telecommunications Standards Institute, the Tispan Group, the ITU, and linked with the 3GPP, who are developing the mobile standards. The important point is that NGNs do create the potential for increased competition in the supply of services and applications. That is a potential, not a reality, and it depends very much on how we develop the best practice that David referred to. One thing I'd say is that NGNs are not directly equivalent to broadband. An NGN can carry and must be able to carry good old telephony and must be able to carry broadband. Some of the broadband services that we have here in New Zealand, in Australia, around the world are definitely not NGN. So that is something I think it's important that NGN has got to cover the full range. So why NGN? From the point of view of the telco side, to replace the current PSTN equipment, circuit switching, if you go to any company, you basically will find that that is passé. There's definitely saving of money with the OPEX saving that comes there, and can obviously potentially generate new revenue from new services. I guess one of the other things that we have to emphasise is that there's a loss of the traditional expertise. Telecom in this country has now moved a lot of that expertise to individual companies, and those companies are really focusing on packet switching rather than circuit switching. Staff reductions and retirements, etc., you'll notice, and myself and David and others who have the tradition of long-term are now getting to the end of our service and have become consultants rather than working for individual companies. That is, the PSTN is passé. And I think the thing that is probably strongest of all is the fact that the internet is coming up very rapidly. The internet, which has no formal standardised hierarchy, is very much the child of market forces, has now a challenge to the traditional PSTN. With ISPs and national transit providers, international transit providers. And things are changing. This is not something which is being, to a large extent, set by people working in Geneva, people working in Wellington. It's something which is being developed by the market. So, what is the internet? This is a very simplified example, but it gives an idea that what we're looking at is a very simple network with most of the things that are important happening outside the network. If I want to send a message to myself, for example, peter.darling@ponderosa.com, it's my computer that takes that meaningful information, then passes it across the internet to the domain name system and gets an IP address, an IP version 4 or IP version 6 address. That is then with me, it has nothing to do with the network. I then use that information that I want to send into a packet and put that address on the packet and send the packet via the internet. If I've got a large amount of information to send, I actually send that with a number of different packets, each with the address on the front. Each packet then goes across the internet, has the to the destination, and at the destination, peter.darling, in that example there, can be used to get to some other point. But again, that is at the distant end. As far as the network is concerned, it just carries the information. One of the problems is that the network carries the packet best endeavours. And in fact, each packet has a timer, and that timer will expire if it goes more than a certain number of hops. It comes to each router. Each router looks at the routing table, or routing table, if you happen to be ancient like myself, and finds the direction to which you ought to go. It's quite likely that each packet will go at different points, and it's also possible a packet will be lost. In that case, you use the transmission control protocol, or TCP, giving the TCP IP protocol arrangements to acknowledge the packet or ask for retransmission of a packet. And that way, you find yourself with a connection from one end to the other, and the information is then dealt with by the equipment sitting at the edge of the network. So, what's that mean? It means that those open interfaces which are provided at the edge of the network support rapid innovation. It's able to operate over a wide range of networks and equipment. You can use your mobile, you can use your fixed, you can use dial-up, you can use broadband, whatever. And you still use the same end-to-end protocol. The networks can survive major interruptions. And the networks are able to provide very efficient use of available resources. Packets are queued if they're lost under those circumstances. They can get close to 100% utilisation. And that really has determined the shape of what we regard as the internet and as broadband at the moment. To a large extent, people are looking at a network which is robust. They're looking at a network which gets through eventually. They're looking at a network which is best endeavours, which carries packets most of the time. That isn't the way, of course, with our problems. Because it's a best endeavours network, it has no guarantee of delivery. The quality of service can't be controlled. There are latency problems. The network, as it's developed, has one size fits all. And there is security, because, quite frankly, this was developed originally as a network, a protocol, and they've bolted on security rather than designing from the beginning. So I guess in summary, the current internet doesn't meet minimum telco requirements, but it is actually a much more efficient network than we're used to in the telco world. So what is the telco world? Very simple. You pick a telephone number. There's no modification except with phone words and so on. You then dial across, you establish across a network to the other end, to that telephone. Possibly you go through a database if there's number portability. But for the duration of a call, you have an actual 64 kilobits path set up across the network. And that 64 kilobits per second path remains until it's teared down by the end. Quite a different way, a full power, full availability once you've dialed. And of course, people have multiple 64 kilobit paths, and video conferences we know and hate tend to use multiple versions of that. So what does this mean? Firstly, well, stepping back a bit, there's a simple model for most networks. There's the core network, the motorways, heavily used, the central part of the network, the traffic from multiple users using that. But as well as that, there has to be an access network. It's not much use having a motorway if you can't get from your house in Auckland or Wellington or Christchurch onto the motorway. Likewise, if you're the smallest farm on the South Island has to have access that eventually will get to a road. So the access network is fairly important, but it is very costly. And a lot of the work in NGN, in broadband, has been development of access networks using the available technology, what's there, what might come in the future. So, looking backwards to this concept of next generation, most people are familiar with the concept of the analog telephone network, the copper wires from the user to the local exchange. In the days gone by, copper wires in the local network and amplified circuits in the long distance network. That's led in New Zealand to free local calls. It's led to relatively expensive long distance calls and relatively cheap, in your case, completely cheap local calls. And that has been the basis, the analog basis that we've known and loved for the telephone network. And it's the basis, I have to say, for most regulation in most countries around the world. Regulators tend to be about two generations behind the reality. Not, of course, that would happen in New Zealand. The current digital generation is rather more advanced than that, with analog voice again, or ISDN 64 kilobits access, over copper to the local exchange. That local exchange could just have a remote unit. It could, is likely, as is shown on this slide, that the actual control is at some regional centre. There's a digital connection across the network, I've already talked about that, with the control centralised, and the services provided from the, from that exchange control within the network. The current internet, on the other hand, is quite different in terms of the way the structure, with the access via an ISP, the ISP to a large extent separate from, might be owned by the telco, a separate commercial relationship being established. It could be dial-up, it could be ADSL2, VDSL, it could be fibre, it could easily be a 3G connection or some other sort of mobile connection. The services are provided, as I've talked about, at the edge of the network, and it's a best endeavours network. And it works very well. And I guess it's probably fair to say that in general, the internet, the public internet, is designed for average traffic or below average traffic, with contention ratios and so on, such that it will cover most of the traffic most of the time, not necessarily the peak busy hour, whereas the other networks we've talked about are looking at design based on busy hours. So, where does that leave this so-called next generation network that people are working on the standards for at the moment? Certainly we're looking at probably a broadband access. We're looking at the possibility of using fibre to the node, to the cabinet, fibre to the premises. We're looking at 3G, we're looking at WiMAX, we're looking at 4G, looking at LTE. The services are likely to be provided at the edge of the network, but most importantly, the standards which are being developed are talking about full quality, able to support interactive services. And one of the things, and I know some of the other speakers may disagree with this, is that at the level that would be acceptable to a government, to a regulator, that the internet cannot support voice. Certainly VoIP services, Skype and so on, work very well most of the time, but they don't work to that same level. Certainly, and looking in the Australian context, if you've got one of the recent bushfires coming through, you want to have something that works and that works most of the time, ideally all the time. And quite frankly, the internet is not that at the moment. The standards which are being developed are very, very much like the internet standards. The ETSI TiSpan has developed this very broad concept of a transport layer and a service layer with applications on top. This creates an interesting economic question. The transport layer is being provided, and in terms of that definition, ought to be open access. The services layer and the applications are being provided, and certainly the applications are being provided at the edge of the network. As far as most people are concerned, the applications, which might include telephony, are the things which would create value. But the transport layer, particularly for the access network, is what would be costly and difficult to produce. And one of the questions that's being looked at around the world, and nobody's really come to the answer yet, is how do you incentivate, to use that lovely word, the provider of the transport layer so, when the benefits come from the providers of the service layer and the application, particularly the applications. And that is one of the real questions that have got to be looked at in this future environment. How do you produce a utility at a necessary cost for the transport layer so that people can use the benefits of the applications? And when a lot of the diagrams I've got so far have tended to talk only about the fixed users, but many people will be mobile users, but equally they could be nomadic. They could use the Wi-Fi in this room, they could work from their office, they could work from home. So fixed, mobile and nomadic users all could use the NGN, and ideally you would like to be able to use the same services and the same sort of approach. So in summary, the sort of technology that we're looking at for the future NGN is a single core network. When I say a single network, that is a network which is a network of networks but is nevertheless not distinguished between Telecom and Telstra Clear and so on. We're looking for an access network, an access platform, which will support the full range of access technologies. We're looking for an access platform which will support mobile and fixed and nomadic users. We're looking for distributed rather than centralised switching, routing and network intelligence, and you're looking for the applications to be as much as possible at the edge of the network. So, this concept you've already heard is not really just next generation networks, it's now generation networks. Telstra in Australia, Telecom here, many others are already providing and developing networks that are very close to the NGN definition. The one point that they miss on the NGN definition is this question of being an open interface able to be used across. And again, the discussion we're having in Australia at the moment, the discussion you're going to have in New Zealand and many other countries, this question of whether there will be an open access interface, how it will be developed, the question of who pays and for what is going to be an important part of the dialogue that has to be done on NGN. So how will these NGNs develop? How are they developing now? They certainly could develop from the existing public internet, though my personal view is that the commercial imperatives of the returns that you get for the public internet make it quite difficult to see that the quality of service which is necessary can be provided. Others have different views. From the introduction of enhanced internet networks for corporate customers, for example, effectively a corporate network has to have that quality of service that I'm talking about. From the introduction of new networks using packet technology by new providers and the upgrading of existing networks using, again, the same packet technology. So whilst the NGN standards and this concept of NGN has largely been a telco question, it could equally and must incorporate the internet world. But NGNs won't be the internet as we know it at the moment. We'll have many shared features, we'll use the standards being developed by the IETF and so on. They could evolve from either the current telephone network or from the current internet, but they will have aspects of both. Again, to reiterate this point, one would expect that the NGN of the future will be able to support telephony. My aunts, my uncle, my mother, my father, they would want to use the telephone network as it stands, as far as they're concerned, for quite some time. Many people who are enthusiasts for this new development tend to forget the fact that the majority of people are very happy with the telephone network. And certainly in Australia, I'm not familiar with the latest here in New Zealand, if you look at the telecommunication legislation, you'll find that almost all is focused on providing a continued service as far as the PSTN is concerned. So, in terms of the development, there's no doubt that the NGN access service, which we'll hear about tomorrow, is going to be very important. And the NGN access provider, whoever they providers, plural, could be, will provide a wholesale transport access service to other service providers. In Australia, we're having an argument at the discussion on the NBN at the moment. I won't tell you, it's almost theological. But one of the important points is that this NGN access service could support full quality of service, and it might be a layer 2 or a layer 3 interface. Beyond that, if NGN was developing from the public internet, it could the primary access would be to the public internet, the quality of service would have to be enhanced, the security concerns would have to be resolved, and the internet backbone effectively becomes the core of the NGN, with possibly, as I've shown on this slide, special facilities for the PSTN and for VoIP for the sort of services. But I guess I'm tending to talk about VoIP. I'm also talking about other interactive services like a voice conversation, a video conversation or whatever. The other alternative would be the NGN could develop from the telephone network, where NGNs work together in a similar way to the current PSTN. There is a requirement for end-to-end quality of service for those services which need that quality of service, but access to the public internet is also going to be likely, hence as I've shown this diagram here. Now this implies that there's going to be IP interconnection, and implies that IP interconnection is going to have to take into account different levels of quality of service. The standards which are being developed by ETSI, by the ITU, talk about 5 levels of quality of service. One way is always provide the highest quality of service. The other method is to provide the quality of service for that particular application. Now, in the past, telco networks have innovated, but they have been special arrangements with one operator. Normally, if you want a particular example, you have to have that from within the operator. You can take something to the operator, but they tend to be conservative, work for business as usual, and reject that. And special arrangements need to be made for interconnection for services which are going to be available over more than one operator. The new services has got to be added to the charging and billing, both for retail and wholesale. It also, if it fits in with a regulated arrangement, maybe in Australian terms declared, and the rollout of that service can be very slow. Still, intelligent networks, as they're so called, from within a network, have produced a number of services. The 800 service that you have here, other services are examples of that. The internet has had much greater and much better record with open access. Anybody can introduce an innovative service. You don't have to talk to the operators. You could have innovation without permission. And of course, this brings in questions of network neutrality, where the operators try and stop you. And again, we might discuss this later on in this. But the service can be offered to the whole world fairly quickly. I said immediately in this slide. But I guess one of the things that I should say at the end of this presentation is the importance of quality of service. That the NGN, the network of the future, of whatever form it's going to be, should be able to support real-time interactive services. That means, to a large extent, it has to support the PSTN, it has to support video conferencing, it has to support video connections, etc. Those things which are going to be used, it has to support real-time texting. To do that, it needs to provide a latency, a continuous quality of service greater than that which is commonly provided from the internet at times of congestion. It's very nice to be able to use VoIP, but to find that the VoIP doesn't work under times of congestion, particularly congestion like a bushfire, an emergency such as an eruption of a volcano or an earthquake or whatever. So despite the ITF work, there still seems to be no real way, clear way, of guaranteeing the end-to-end quality of service across networks with the current internet implementations. It's a problem that needs to be looked at, and it's a problem that's starting to be looked at, but it's a problem that hasn't been solved as yet. How do you provide that required quality of service? Firstly, you could use a proprietary approach, and a number of people such as Cisco have developed network equipment approaches. You could use the IETF standards, and those standards have certainly been used quite a lot within corporate networks. You could ensure that no link or router can have congestion at any point. And that is a very big question when you don't have control of the network. Perhaps you need a peering arrangement which takes into account the quality of service arrangements that are not taken into account by the current peering arrangements for the internet. So the current situation is that for almost all work, you've got the IETF looking at techniques which are within a single corporate network. Now, for the NGN to work, for the network of the future to have that capability of supporting all services from the slowest reading of a meter to the fastest broadband, interactive services as well as file transfer and so on, you need to find that there is some mechanism to give that necessary quality of service. End-to-end connectivity isn't assured, and the priority work is really necessary. Otherwise, we'll find that the hype will be the hype of the NGN. Certainly, Telecom and Telstra Clear and others will upgrade their network to use packet, but they will not necessarily be able to interconnect. They will not necessarily interconnect other than PSTN interconnection. We need to have standards and we need to have the commercial implementation for interconnection. And that work is already being done. The GSM Association, which is obviously more than GSM now, it's 3G and so on, ETSI and so on, are looking at the possibility of extending the peering arrangements into an IPX approach, which effectively would produce something like this diagram. A network of a high quality interconnected, with the internet connection remaining below that, but with the capability of getting that high quality. And again, using different techniques in terms of making sure that you retain the quality of service beyond there. So, in summary, the access technology is obviously crucial for future network development, and that's a key point of broadband. It's unlikely it'll be to duplicate NGN access technology, what I would call, as a non-economist, a natural monopoly in many areas. But you have to have a wholesale NGN access service to support competition. If you don't, you'll find that the people who provide will try and grab the benefits that they get from the applications. So to a very large extent, that wholesale open NGN access service is a key part of the development. It's in the original definition by the ITU. It's probably the point where most applications, most implementations depart. One of the major policy challenges is going to strike this appropriate balance between looking toward the future and the socially important services, particularly the PSTN, from the current environment and supporting both of them. We can't just look forward. We can say, okay, in 7 years' time, PSTN will be nothing. But my parents don't believe that because as far as they're concerned, they use the PSTN. I use the PSTN. I use it from my mobile rather than from the fixed. So to a large extent, that balance has to be struck. I'd repeat again that NGN is not equivalent to broadband. You could have broadband without NGN. And many of the services that the future networks will support will not be broadband services. They'll be quite slow speed services. So One of the points is that I'm the world's worst person. I live in a rural area in Australia outside Melbourne, just on the edge of the bushfire zone at the moment. I've got quite bad mobile service, quite bad broadband service and so on. But I do hope that NGN will give me some benefits as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Peter, and thank you for setting the standard of for the rest of the 2 days by completing your presentation without me having to resort to the gong. That actually means we've got a couple of minutes for any questions if people wish to raise them now. Now, we will be, after morning tea, having the be addressed by the Minister, and then Kip Meek from the Broadband Stakeholders Group in the UK will be joining us, followed by a panel in which we'll basically be asking the question, what's it all about? But we won't be asking Alfie. But if you do have any questions specifically for Peter, or if there's not only a question, if there's something you'd like to contend, feel free. We do have two young students who are prepared to come around with your microphone. So if you'd like to indicate in the standard way, there's a hand. And just as a reminder, the usual courtesy, please, your name and affiliation, if you could, before you speak.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Yes. I'd like to raise a point about your contention that voice over IP services might be less reliable than the public telephone network in the event of a catastrophe. I was with the U.S. Federal Scott Marcus, I'm with Vic. I was with the U.S. Federal Communications Commission from 2001 to 2005. I was there during the September 11th crisis. I was a member of their Homeland Security Policy Council. Actually, the experience after September 11th, and this is well documented in reports from the U.S. National Academies of Science, was almost the opposite of what you suggest. After September 11th, the fixed network was flat on its back. The mobile network was massively overloaded with calls to the point of being unusable. The internet essentially experienced no major disruptions, even though a major hub was practically right next to the World Trade Center, which was wiped out. The only disruptions that took place, or the only point where there were significant problems, was actually 3 days later. And the problem was that the battery backups had kicked in well, the generators had kicked in well, the police weren't allowing fuel trucks into the impacted area, so they couldn't refuel the generators. But as far as the inherent reliability of the technology, it was good. That really was, it was better, far more robust. And robustness can be more important than reliability. It was far more robust, actually, than the conventional network.
Thanks, I better go.
There is a microphone in front of you there, Peter. You could answer preserve your back.
There's no doubt that the internet is a much more robust network, potentially. The point that I was trying to make is that the robustness is not necessarily for voice over IP, that is something which really was not designed in the beginning. That certainly it can be designed into the network, and perhaps in the US environment, with the way the network has been developed, with the glut that they had at that stage of broadband, it would be a network that would be better to be used. But I believe that there have been problems under some circumstances, certainly in Australia and in New Zealand with a relatively thin connection to the rest of the world, we have had problems in terms of that. Having said which, voice over IP works most of the time and works very well. But it wasn't designed that way, and there is a danger that it can be sub-economic design can result in things which were problems. And I guess one of the regulatory questions is, do you rely on people to actually keep that robustness that we had, or is it something that needs to be regulated? And it's a question which I can't answer. I certainly would see something which is really up to the regulators and the government to decide.
It actually introduces an interesting word which very seldom gets mentioned in these conversations, and it's the word latency. The internet will work wonderfully well, it's robust, but when it's being robust, what happens to its latency? And so does it work as well for an interactive voice call whilst it might still provide communications? I'd be pleased to understand that more. Any other? There's a hand being pointed in this direction, up the back, very back.
David Butcher and Associates. We've done quite a bit of work in telecommunications, and our thinking is that increasingly service providers will be charged on a usage basis for access, which tends to suggest that the configuration for billing in the future may be bill and keep and charge for usage. Do you agree with that configuration?
I would have to say that, well, the first defence would be I'm just a simple engineer. The second defence would be the difference between a customer and a service provider arrangement. I would say yes, bill and keep is perhaps one of the ways, but I think you'd have to take into account the fact of quality. Do you charge for different qualities or not? In other words, do you assume that it's always high quality? Do you actually charge for different quality of service and so on? So the charging algorithms that you use in the NGN can be a lot more complicated. Or you can say, okay, under those circumstances, we assume everything is platinum plated. But I suspect the market will still have tin and gold plating as well.
Any other observations? You are more than welcome to make statements, not ask questions. So at this stage, if you wanted to contend an element of Peter's description.
Yeah. I'd like to say something if I could.
You may.
Oh, thank you. And that is I've tended to run very rapidly over the international work that's being done. But it's interesting that to a large extent the Europeans are the ones who are pushing for NGN, and it's the big telcos in NGN, that to a much lesser extent that's coming from North America, where there's much more competition from broadband providers and so on. Certainly they're using upgrades based on packet, but the NGN concept, the NGN drive, is coming from ETSI into the ITU rather than from the North American standards bodies. So it's interesting to look at the different environment that produces a different pressure for different sorts of things. In the US, to a large extent, you find the telcos are much more looking at the competition from the providers of the cable networks, the HFC networks they have there.
Any other observations? There's one up there, I believe.
Jamie Bedley, FX Networks. Just a comment, really. QoS is essentially a congestion response strategy. I actually like to call it managing unfairness. An IP core that needs a QoS or congestion response strategy is not actually an IP core. A core should not be congested.
The core should not be congested. That seems to be like the network should always be neutral. In other words, yes, I think most people would agree, as they would agree with motherhood. Whether that would be necessarily so without design is another question.
And can I make an observation there, which is that I know of recent experiences in many cases where unforeseen circumstances do result in the core being congested. Best example I remember was one where Telstra had a major problem caused by some viruses in their mail servers that filled their core with traffic, and they didn't have enough headroom and their network came to a grinding halt. The question comes down to what happens if the core doesn't have the capacity, but we'll discuss that. Any other observations? One there, sorry.
Just on the question of quality of service, and you're talking about platinum plated, and I think that's what we've happened to get in the PSTN world all the way, because the telcos have controlled it. But just the same as people quite happy to buy budget grade baked beans in the supermarket, and some of them will pay the extra large price for a top quality gourmet quality product, I think the market will soon sort out the difference between operators who provide a slightly lower QoS than some others who obtain provide a gold-plated one, and the price will probably determine it. So not everyone wants a platinum one if they have to pay about three times the price that they do for a lower quality one. We just haven't had the choice in telecommunications up until now to do that.
The argument against that is a political rather than an economic argument. And certainly in Australia there have been situations where less than adequate rural communications have resulted in people not getting access to an ambulance and so on. So it's really a question which has got to be taken socially as to whether that's a socially important service and as a consequence ought to be regulated, or whether the market should determine. And I'm not saying it should be one way or the other, but certainly in the environments that I'm familiar with, there have been some regulation, and even in New Zealand there is base regulation that reflects that environment.
Okay, well, we've now reached the magic hour. Ernie, you'll get a chance shortly. We've now reached the magic hour of 10 o'clock, which is in fact our scheduled morning tea break. So if you could please reassemble here at 10:30, as I said, morning tea is through in the foyer as you had your morning coffee. And if you could just join me once more thanking Peter for his presentation.